Everybody likes guns. They just don't know it. Deep inside of his soul, there's a cowboy trying to get out.
Welcome to New Shooter Canada. Please remember that the show's content and word pronunciation is simply the opinion of the hosts and their guests.
Hello and welcome to New Shooter Canada, episode 151, and an angel gets its wing, or something like that. Isn't it every time somebody gets their R-Pal and Pal and angel gets its wings?
Sure.
That's what we're going with this week. Wanted Bradley took her course this week and passed with flying colors, so a new angel gets its wings. But before we get to the beautiful Wanda, we will start with what we did in guns. And Thomas, what did you... Oh, that's right, Thomas isn't here because he doesn't like the listeners. Uh-huh.
That's what I heard.
Thomas is on vacation and under threat of murder. He's not allowed to come on the show this week because... You know, sometimes wives like to spend time with their husbands, so.
What's with that?
I know, right? They're so needy. And your hate mail can go to thomas@gmail.com. Anyways, Thomas is, all kidding aside, Thomas is on vacation this week with his lovely wife, Terry. And so we wish them the very best, but he did give us an audio submission, so we will give that a listen to right now, and we'll see you on the flip side.
Well, I'm not actually here this week. I'm probably pulling a George, and right now I'm probably sitting in a boat with my fishing rod and an iced tea and a cigar, and I'm fishing. Unlike George, I'm actually fishing. And I like the listener, so I'm going to leave what I did with guns and not ignore people like George does. A few things this week. And now that I'm the Southern Ontario business rep for Grand Power Pistols, I wanted to go out and do a couple business calls. So the one place I wanted to hit was Ganyan Sports in Oshawa because I had two objectives. I wanted to, of course, sell the product. And I wanted to see the new range. So I've been shopping there probably about 25 years. I've dealt with Natalie and Jerry and the kids. So I'm in there and I'm waiting for Jerry to come out and I hear gunfire going off. I go, oh, is the range open? He goes, yeah, we just got approval. The CFO just left. Perfect. So Jerry comes out and I give him a little spiel. I said, you're more than welcome to shoot them if you want. He goes, well, I don't really have time. He goes, but my nephew would love to. So I went back there and Natalie's son shot the X-Trim and the X-Cal and he absolutely loved the gun. So I'll be getting some orders through for Grand Power Pistols for Ganyan Sports. The range, it impressed me. It really did. Actually, the CFO had just left. And they stated that it was the most over-engineered range they've ever seen. That's how well it was put together. I'm not sure what the approval is on it. I didn't see the range approval, but I think they're gearing it more towards hunters and target shooters. They mentioned that they're going to leave the IPSC and everything else to FOC. But you never know. If their membership wants action pistol, they may do it. But the range itself, let me tell you about it. At my range, when you go up to the bench, everything's wide open. There's nothing between me and another shooter. So if I'm back a little bit, my brass is hitting you. If something happens, I'm there. I'm in the way. This place is like you walk into a cubicle, an office cubicle, except your office cubicle, your walls on each side are 3 inches thick of bulletproof glass, which is great. And it was wide. You could fit about two people in there. So from floor to ceiling, it's solid till about maybe 4 feet down. And the last 4 feet, that is AR-500 steel. So if the god-awful chance at something, if there is an Eglin discharge beside you further down the range, as long as you're inside your little cocoon shooting, you're not going to get hurt. So safety-wise, it was really well set up. Another thing I liked is that the backstop is not steel. So you don't hear ping, ping, ping when it hits. It's about four feet of shredded rubber. And so you hear your shot, but you don't hear the impact, which I kind of liked. The target return, or the automatic target system, I've never seen one go so fast. On your left-hand side, there's a control panel. It has, you can either set it whatever distance you want, or it's got preset at 7.5, 12, 15, and I think 25 yards. You hit your button, it slowly goes out for about the first 2 feet, and then it must hit about 30 miles an hour, and it shoots down the range. Which is kind of nice, because mine, you have to stop, everybody's got to go green, everybody's got to get safe, everybody's got to stand back, you got to go your target, go down range. So just the convenience of having an automatic target returner was really, really nice. So in the 25-yard section, there was probably, I'm guessing, 8 positions, because I didn't count them. and that's mostly for pistol. And then there's another entrance to your left, and there's 6 50-yard positions, which is more designed for rifles, because there's a guy actually shooting 7mm Magnum. Why do you want to shoot at 50 yards? I don't know, but it gives you a chance to sight it up. And it's kind of different, because you don't even know the range is there. You have to actually go through the retail section to get to the range. So there's an entrance outside the gun shop, and there's an entrance for the staff inside the gun shop. So when you go inside the range area, and it's all controlled, there's all buzzer systems, so people that aren't supposed to be there can't get in there. When you walk in, there's a nice big lounge, lots of room to sit down, washroom, places to clean up, nice big, a fairly large retail area inside, big L-shaped counter, and I bet you they could probably display probably 75 handguns in there. As I said, it was just set up, so there was no products in there whatsoever. They just opened 2 hours ago, but it was very well run. Kevin Bartley from Gobble Stalker Calls, he's actually working at Gagnon's, and they were really, really going through the safety rules, making sure when they left, they actually had to change their shirts. They had to wash up. So it was great to see stuff like that. And then after that, because I was so close, I'm always curious to see what the new Canadian Gun Works looks like. I didn't get there for business. It was just my own personal curiosity. So I went in there. Andrew's brother was there, and I just blanked on his name again. I don't know why. And it's rather a small shop. It had double door man trap, so it took a couple seconds to actually get in the store. But it's tiny. It's long. It was probably maybe 15 yards long, not very deep. The back wall, it looked more like a Trigger Wholesale boutique to me. Not a lot of products there personally I would buy, because I really don't like a lot of the stuff that's coming out of Trigger Wholesale. But they did have some Smith & Wesson's at good deals, and they did have some SIGs. They had a lot of S&J hardware shotgun supplies, so mag tube, followers, stuff like that. So they did have a lot of stock that way. The only thing they didn't have was optics, because I was looking for a new Hawk scope and a Holosun scope, and there's nothing on their website. So as I said, it's new. Their open house was last month, so maybe they sold off. It was okay. I didn't make it to the back shop. They're supposed to have their Cerakote shop set up and their Vaporplane shop set up, and it's still not done, Andrew. But his brother is going to get certified to apply the Cerakote. But there's like a 3-month waiting list down in the States. And he found out that they're actually having a course in Japan. Same company, Cerakote's having it in Japan in a couple weeks. So he's going to bite the bullet, play the airfare, and go to Japan and get certified so he can apply the Cerakote. So it'll be another certified applicator in the province, at least. And what else? So that's about it I did gun-wise. Now, where I'm going for vacation, I'm really, really lucky, because I'm looking at the map. If you're, oh, my favorite gunsmith's like 5 miles away. So I've packed up my BL-22, and I've packed up my other Browning. I've got my pump, because I want to do something on the pump. But I'm going to take the 22 down and get Keith to work on the trigger, because it's a little heavy. It's a little over 7 pounds. It's clean, but it's... I don't like heavy triggers in 22s. I can handle it on a centerfire. I don't mind if an AR or something else has got a heavy trigger. But with a 22, I really like to nuzzle right into it and really work on my shots. I like it to be at least under 4 pounds. Like most of my 22s are 3.5. My 10-22 is 2.5. So I'll take that out with me. The sad part is that this place we're going to is not dog friendly. So for the first time in 10 years, Colt gets to stay home. So he'll be here guarding the house. My neighbor will be coming over a couple times a day, let him out, do his business. So until next week, be safe, and we'll speak to you then.
Now that the side's been flipped.
And we're back. Okay. Thank you, Thomas, for that submission. It was insightful, enlightening, and I'm a better person for having listened to it.
Did you listen to it?
Awkward moment when you haven't listened to it.
Yeah, I didn't actually listen to it yet.
It's okay. I'm sure half the listeners just tuned out, too.
Mike's listened to it. So, all right, moving on. Mike, what did you do?
I did more I-Corps practice with Sarah, which was really useful for her. Got through a lot more things, just how to run a revolver. It also led to essentially just more dry fire for me, so that was always great. Sarah and I shot an IDPA match. Everything went good, no results out yet. Well, I should say everything went well for me. Sarah brought her branch banking new, never even shot the M&P Pro out, and it started jamming on her on the very first stage. Essentially, it was a one-shot gun. Every time she'd shoot, it would cycle, but it wouldn't feed the next round. Unfortunately, we just didn't have time to figure it out, so Sarah ended up shooting the Q5 for the rest of the match, and she actually did really good with it, so it was pretty awesome.
Cool.
And then outside of that, I just I cleaned some brass.
I did that too.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Cleaning brass thing. You just reload it and shoot it again. It gets dirty. It's like making a bed. Who makes a bed in the morning? You're just going to mess it up again at night.
Yeah, but George, when you pull out your brand spanking new homemade reloads and they look factory, yeah, it's just something you gotta appreciate.
See, I don't.
So I picked up my pins from Thomas in order to try out this new Tumblr I got for them trying out for BennyLewis.ca. We'll see when we get it up on the website if we do. And it worked pretty well. I'm just working out the ratio, brass to steel, and. That's all, folks.
Very efficient and to the point.
So how much, what is the weight capacity on that tumbler?
6 kilos, but it's only got like a liter capacity. So as much as it can take a lot, like heavy items, it doesn't have the volume for it.
Okay, so pretty much you can, air quote here, fill it up to the top and it's fine. You'll never overfill it with weight.
Right. The only issue is that if you fill it up too much, then you won't get proper tumbling.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel, and something I did learn this week is you don't tumble different types of cases, at least not pistol cases, rifle maybe, or something with a shoulder, because everything gets stuck in 40s. I don't even own a 40, but everything gets stuck in 40s.
Oh, yeah.
223, 9mm, yeah.
Yeah. The best is when you'll pull out a 45 and you'll be like, oh, there's a case stuck in it, and you'll pull it out and it will be a 40, and inside that 40 will be a 9. And then you do that, and you're like, of course, you're not doing it over top of the sink because you're pulling these apart, and all of a sudden, all these pins fall out because they were all stuck inside that little chamber.
So I'm using a, not really a colander. It's like a mesh, I guess a mesh colander, so it doesn't really have the big holes. It's just the little ones, and it actually keeps all the brass and pins in this little thing. So in this really big, I guess we'll call it a spider because I can't remember if it has a real name. Maybe I'll upload the video to our Facebook page of me cleaning out after I tumbled my rifle brass for 3 hours. Although it did sit in the water for 25 hours because I didn't have time to finish cleaning it before the Sabbath was over or yesterday. So, yeah.
Well, I think that's fine. That's often what happens for me, too, is I'll run it. And I put on a timer and I go to bed and then it sits for who knows how long until next time I get to it. If I'm really that concerned, I just run it for like 20 minutes just to re-stir everything up.
Right. So if it is completely submerged, it shouldn't start to rust or corrode or anything because it's not exposed to air. So what I did was I emptied out the bad water, filled it up again, shook it a little, and it was like the water immediately got filthy again. But just made sure everything was submerged and then let it sit overnight.
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't be worried about the rust. It's more about the any dirt if it's really thick. Becoming like sediment and settling back down again.
Yes.
Yeah.
Good point. I guess I entered a contest too. You see, I don't put these things in the show notes and I surprise everyone. FOC has a contest. Let me just pull it up. It's on Instagram. If you post a photo of your 9mm firearm, tag at Firearms Outlet Canada with a period between each word. Using hashtag FOC low recoil, and you have a chance to win 100 rounds of their 9mm. Oh, that's the contest.
Alright, so this brings us to me. And actually, this is kind of what I did in shooting between the last time I was on the show and this weekend. So I went to, so my buddy Terry comes back to London every, because he's from London, lives in Saskatchewan, comes back to London every year to visit friends and family. So I went shooting with Terry twice during his visit. Before he came, I thought he needed a Form 6 travel with guns through the U.S., but he looked into it, and everything he found said no, and I was like, well, okay, you're definitely going to find out when you get to the border if what you found out was true or not. Oh, I got too wordy in the show notes. Anyways, So he got to U.S. Customs, and no big deal. He just told them he was traversing through Canada, or through the U.S. to, from one point of Canada to another, and the only thing they did say was that he should have stopped at Canada Customs to document what was leaving the country so that he doesn't get dinged paying duty on the equipment coming into the country. And so he was like, oh, that's a good idea. So coming into the country, no problems. They didn't bug him. On the way back to Saskatchewan, he did stop at Canada Customs with a piece of paper with the model and serial numbers. A couple questions, and his papers were stamped, and off he went. They didn't even look to, like, inspect anything. So it wasn't as big of a deal as one might think, or at least it didn't.
Was he bringing anything that might be considered, what, a Class 3 or whatever they call it in the U.S., short-barreled rifles?
No.
No.
No, it was a Savage 64, and was just a little Plinkin 22, and an 870 shotgun.
Okay.
I think. And, yeah, it was definitely not short-barreled. The thing reminded me of a Mosin. It was, like, a big long barrel on the thing, so. So non-restricted. And, well, in the States, there's no such thing as restricted, non-restricted, in the sense of, like, in Canada. So.
No, but we can have, like, a pump-action shotgun, we could have, like, a little 12-inch barrel on it. And in the U.S., I think that would be considered a Class 3, and you need to pay a tax stamp for it.
Yeah.
I think whether you're going down for competition or not, that's considered a no-no. You can't bring those down at all.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. So, yeah, no, he didn't fall into that category. So he got to the border, and he declared his firearms, a couple questions, and then he got his have a nice day, and off he went. He was telling me, during his trip back, he was driving on the highway, and I could totally picture this in my head, major rainstorm, he's got his wipers going on, and the driver's side wiper goes and flies right off the car. So he's trying to get his car pulled over in the middle of this rainstorm. And he gets out, and he's trying to pull the passenger one off to put it on the driver's side so he can continue on. And a state trooper or a cop or somebody came by and was talking to him and was trying to give him a hand. And for whatever reason, he had to get something out of the trunk. So he said to the cop, he's like, well, just so you know, there's firearms in the trunk. And cop was like, oh, so, okay, that's nice to know. Thanks for telling me. But, you know, let's get this car fixed and get you to the Walmart and that. And So you had no problems there, and then got to Walmart, got a new blade, got back on the road, gets to the Canadian border, shows them the paper with the stamp on it, just declaring that he had left the country with these items, he's re-entering the country with the same items. A couple questions, no inspection, and he got his have a nice day, and off he went. So,
wow.
I got in the show notes, moral of the story, be upfront and honest, and you will have, I've got this in quotes, have a nice day. You know, these folks are, they're just there to do a job. The more smoothly you can make their job and the process go, the more likely you'll have a pleasant experience.
Yeah.
You always see the YouTube videos of some butt clown, you know, I have the right, and I'm blah, 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 getting in the cop's face and being a real jerk. Well, you may have the right, but being a jerk and a butthead doesn't make anyone's day pleasant, and it's not going to make your day pleasant, because now the cop's going to be well within his right to make your day miserable, right? So, yeah.
Wonder how smooth that would have went if he had a handgun with him.
I would suspect no different.
I would like to think so, but
as long as it's being transported in the manner that you mean on the Canadian side?
Yeah, I guess probably more or less coming back across the border.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because I'd assume you get an ATT to, you know, you're going out to Manitoba, because you're going to go out there and do the mounted shooting, right, Thomas? Or Thomas, George?
I'm George.
Yeah, I know.
That doesn't like the listeners, because he's not here this week.
Yeah, sorry, I forgot. I got the two of you mixed up, because normally you're the one that's not here, because you don't like the listeners.
Oh!
So I think the moral of the story is you guys should just both stay on the show more often, and then we might not mix you up as much.
They're both just old, Benny. It's just old people all look alike.
Old people all look alike. See, Thomas needs to get some pointers from you. His zingers are like lame ducks. Love you, Thomas. I truly do love you. Even though, you know, you're at a 5-star resort and, you know, my people apparently aren't welcome there. Too good for us.
Your kind not welcome.
Yeah. So anyways, he had no problems at all. Everyone was pleasant. And, you know, like for work, I cross the border every day and, you know, I pull up, paperwork's there. Yes, sir. No, sir. Yes, sir. No, sir. Boom. I'm through. Like, I don't get any problems. I don't get any attitudes. Even when I set off the radiation alarm, they're very pleasant to me.
What did you eat for dinner that you're setting off the radiation alarm?
It was some sort of phosphorus that I was transporting. It was my load. And the guy goes, oh, today's your lucky day. And I'm like, how is it my lucky day? Because there's nothing lucky when a border guard tells you it's your lucky day. And he starts laughing, and he goes, the lineup in secondary short, you set off the radiation alarm, you have to go get checked. And I'm like, how is that lucky when I'm setting off radiation alarms? I'm like, that can't be good. And he's like, ah, it happens all the time. I'm like, I don't think that makes me feel any better, but okay. So, they're good people. I've never, whether I've gone through in a commercial truck or when I was dating that, earmuffs, babe, when I was dating that American girl, I was crossing the border almost every weekend at one point. And yeah, yes, sir, no, sir, and you're through, no problem. And that's what Terry did, and he said he had a very pleasant experience, so that was pretty cool. So if you're traversing the country, or the U.S., from one point of Canada to another, then you don't need your Form 6 NIA. Unless you're going to be stopping and shooting. But if you're just crossing the U.S. to get from one part of Canada to another, no Form 6. So that was good to know.
Yeah, that is. Mind you, I've gotten my Form 6, and it is pretty easy to get it.
Well, and from what I've heard, they've made it even easier, because you used to need an invitation letter, and they've done away with that part of the process now, I guess.
Oh, really? Because last time I went down, I needed an invitation. But I think you only needed an invitation, I think, when you applied for it. I don't think you necessarily needed an invitation when you actually went down.
Oh, maybe that's what it was.
But it's so easy. Like, an invitation, like, you go, any, like, major shooting competitions can use something like Practice Score, where you go online and you sign up online. Well, there's your invitation, your air quote invitation right there to go shoot.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was cool. And then I thought, so that's the end of the Terry story. The other thing that happened to me was I had contacted ISSC about my pistol, because the slide doesn't move forward. You got to stick your finger inside to push the slide stop down. And after emails back and forth, and I got a little frustrated, and I said to him, I said, listen, I do a podcast, and I'd be more than happy to do a YouTube video, post it publicly, and then send you the link via the podcast that covers it. Oh, no, I think I understand what you're talking about now. And I'm like, yeah, frickin' right, you understand me now.
So are they sending you a new gun?
No. The last I heard was, well, just, it's a break-in period. You just gotta fire a bunch of rounds through it. And I'm like, listen, I've fired over 500 rounds through this thing. Actually, it was probably more like close to 2,000. But, and then I never heard anything back. And I'm like, okay, well, they just brushed me off. So I'm like, that's kind of sad. But I was like, whatever. And then just out of the blue, I got an email saying, okay, we're going to send you the parts to fix it. Attached is the manual on how to fix it. If you don't feel comfortable fixing it yourself, you can take it to somebody else. Oh, and by any self-fixing, or if you take it to somebody that's not a qualified gunsmith, your warranty's null and void. Have a nice day. Thank you for your patronage. Basically, here's your parts, and I'll piss off. I'm like, I'm okay with that, because that's more than I thought I was going to get. I thought I was getting a kick in the teeth and a piss off with no parts. So now I'm getting parts. So that's pretty cool.
I think we can all agree and dox this company and say, was it ICCS? What's the company's name, George?
ISSC.
ISSC is not the best company to deal with, and their customer service stinks. Keep that in mind with your future gun purchases, listeners.
Well, in their defense, it was, they've got a generation 2 out, and they've fixed the problem in the generation 2s. Okay. So the problem doesn't exist anymore. And
right. But you're an existing customer, Thomas. George, sorry. And you own something they've created that's supposed to run properly. That's all nice and good that they've fixed the problem in every gun after yours. It doesn't help anyone who had a gun, you or anyone before you. So that's not how you run customer service. If you have a problem, and especially if you have a fix for it, I know it's not as bad as, say, SIG, where it's a safety issue, but where the gun is basically run, it is inoperable without you shoving your fingers in places that it shouldn't be shoved. I'm sorry, but that's not how to run your business. And if you're running a firearm business, that's just not, I'm sorry.
Yeah, but again, I'm some random guy that filled out a form on their website. So, and it's, the gun's like over 2 years old.
Is it still covered by their warranty?
That's the thing. I have no idea. I don't, I don't even know if it has a warranty on it.
If they said, well, by their response, I'm assuming it still has a warranty. Otherwise, they wouldn't say, oh, it's, you know, your warranty will be void if you have someone else work on it. I think at this point, they, you know, if it's quote unquote still under warranty and they're sending you these parts, that you should have just, they should have just sent you a packing slip. You sent the gun to them, then gone over it, fixed it, and sent it back to you.
Wow, you're a ball buster.
No, it's the companies. If the way they treated you, George, is not right at all.
I'm happy I'm getting parts.
Benny's the new bruiser of New Shooter Canada.
And, oh, did I mention I got a boat?
Yeah, you did, like 6 times.
Okay. Oh, actually, you know what else I did? Is I've been suggesting that I set up an actual New Shooter Canada YouTube channel instead of just running off my own personal channel. And now with all the sailing videos I'm doing, or fixing up the boat videos, I decided that it was probably time to actually get off my lazy butt and do it. So there's now an actual New Shooter Canada YouTube channel. There's nothing on it yet. So, and I'm not sure how we'll incorporate that into the website and Facebook or how that's going to get utilized, but so.
Well, yeah, obviously you're a listener if you're listening to this. Let us know what you want to see on the YouTube channel. Let us know what we can't, you know, convey over a podcast that you'd like to see.
So that's something for the future.
So if you guys want to watch my Tumblr work for 2 hours straight, we can do that.
Once you've seen the first 30 seconds, you've seen the rest of it.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking. All right, so, I did mention her at the beginning, is Wanda. What did you do in guns this week, babe?
I got my pal in our pal.
Fantastic. How about you tell us all about it in a couple minutes?
Okay.
So, because that's all Wanda's done this week in guns, and that's kind of our main topic, so. Guns in the news.
Police say the owner of the Camelon restaurant in Castlegar, BC. Did I pronounce it right? Castlegar? Hey, send us hate mail. We love getting mail. BC used reasonable force to defend himself from an early morning intruder. Castlegar RCMP Sergeant Laurel Matthews says the incident took place on September 3rd at around 4:40 a.m. The owner of Camelon restaurant was sleeping in his living room above the restaurant when he heard smashing and glass breaking. He went to investigate, she explains, taking a .22 revolver to protect himself. He went downstairs and was confronted by an intruder who bear sprayed him in the face, incapacitating him, she said. As he was being sprayed, the owner fired his gun. The suspect managed to run away, and the owner called police. A few days later, after receiving a number of tips from the public, police were able to nab a suspect, 35-year-old Brandon Malkinson of Nelson. Malkinson had been wounded by a gunshot, but stayed 4 days in Kootenays without going to a doctor or hospital. After his arrest, he was taken to doctor by the police, checked over, and found to be fit for incarceration, Matthew said, adding he did not have serious injuries.
Hold on. The guy got shot by a .22 pistol, did nothing about it for 4 days, and he doesn't have serious injuries.
Well, didn't you know .22s just bounce off you? Don't test that at home.
That's kind of my point. Anyway, sorry, Benny. Go on and finish. I'll save my comments for the end.
Mackelson was charged with numerous offenses, including breaking and entering and breaching a probationary order. He was found guilty September 11th. 2 days later, he was sentenced to 30 months. That seems like a very long time. In jail, Matthew says police will not be charging the owner. We consider all the facts and circumstances, she explained. He took a significant blast of bear spray to the face, which incapacitated him, and at that point, he was protected himself from who knows what at that point. His use of force was reasonable under these circumstances. I wish they'd take this to court just for, like, the 20 minutes it takes the judge to say, okay, not guilty or innocent or whatever the right terminology is, and let him go be on his way just so we have the case law. Because if you don't charge him, there's no case law.
If they brought him to court, he wouldn't just be up for that. He'd be up for probably reckless discharging of a firearm because he was bear sprayed. He couldn't see, but he still shot a gun off. That seemed kind of reckless.
Yeah.
Well, and look at what Ian Thompson went through. Unsafe storage. Yeah.
Right. So that's the good thing about Ian Thompson is that there's case law, even though they botched it by charging him with unsafe storage instead of, you know, defending his life, but...
Yeah, my point is that if he was on his way to court, they would throw the book at him, and by the time he actually stood in front of a judge, they'd be like, oh, this is no good, but since we already have this other charge on the books for him, for whatever it is, unsafe storage, we might as well just keep going with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we were lucky, because Ian Thompson decided to mortgage his house to fight it. I don't know, most people are going to say, you know, they'll offer a plea bargain, and they'll chomp at the bit for the plea bargain. Now you got bad case law against you.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why you need to get the CCFR's legal defense with your membership.
Well, I think you have to buy it extra, don't you?
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying, with your membership. So you pay your $45, and then you pay your, I think it's $96?
I have no idea what it is, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't know. My dad's got it. I don't have it. No, I just want to kind of go back to this. Does it say how many times he got shot?
No, just the once. It sounds like he just got shot once, and it sounds like, you know, they don't say where he got shot. So for all we know, that he's got a graze on his arm, or it went right through his bicep, or gave him an extra piercing in his ear.
Yeah. The reason why I kind of find this humorous in a kind of a dark way is that you've got people that are educated on firearms by what they see in TV or on TV and in movies. And I can't remember what movie it was, but Samuel L. Jackson's talking about his grandfather walked to and from work every day with his .22 long rifle pistol in his lunchbox. And I'm like, what's he going to do? Pistol whip somebody with it? Because he sure ain't going to shoot somebody and do much damage. But
well, it depends where you hit him.
They make it... of course, it always depends where you hit. But I'm saying, like, even if you were to shoot somebody in the head with a .22, it's not going to be as catastrophic as the movies and the media make it seem. Anyone wants to get shot in the head. Or get shot with a .22. That's not what I'm advocating. What I'm saying is that the media and Hollywood portray gunshots is a gross over exaggeration to the reality of it. And this story kind of demonstrates that. I've seen YouTube videos where they've had, it was a police takedowns where they've shot suspects and you could hear the cops and the guy's walking. And he's barely being fazed by the bullets.
Are they hitting him, though?
30 seconds later, he collapses dead. But, like, there's no spectacular flipping and flying through the air. And you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, this guy was shot for 4 days with a .22.
Yeah, but if he was already, if he was cleared, then I would make me think that there wasn't actually anything like horribly wrong with him to begin with.
Like a grazing wound.
Wow.
Yeah, like they that's why I said through the ear, because you know it's got to be he got shot, not like scratched.
I get it. Obviously, he wasn't shot through the heart. But I'm just saying. Anyways, story two.
Britain's most criminally huge gun, Daily News, nude by Matthew Moss. A couple of months ago, we mentioned on our show how criminals tend to rent illegal guns to other criminals. Well, back in July, UK armed police launched a dawn raid on a home in Kirby, near Liverpool. On searching the house, they discovered a hidden Beretta 9000S pistol. What makes the pistol that was seized so interesting is that forensic examination revealed it had been used in 19 separate shootings over 7 years, making it Britain's most criminally used individual firearm.
Okay.
Yeah, scratching my head at that one.
I think it's the pistol that they used. It's, I think I heard it on Handgun Radio. It's some old Beretta that completely flopped and they didn't make it.
It looks like the compact version of the 92, but like polymer.
That looks... I wouldn't say that looks anything like the Beretta 92.
Sorry, you know what it is? It's the barrel, because the barrel is like... It's like cut down, so it looks like it's got
the cutaway slide.
Ejection port.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty much as close as it gets to the 92, you're right.
Oh.
So how's your gun bans working for you, Mr. and Mrs. UK?
Apparently good if the most criminally used firearm was only used 19 times.
Either that, or this is just a very unlucky firearm, and they happen to have an overabundance, and most of their shootings are done with different firearms.
Well, doesn't it start out saying that it's something about renting illegal guns to criminals? So, like, if you're like a low-budget hitman, you go...
A low-budget hitman.
You know, like your driver's license behind and then come back and exchange the gun back for your driver's license or something? Or is there like a rent it 9 times and your 10th time is free?
10th punch card?
Yeah.
You talk about a budget one, I just imagine someone being like, I have a coupon for one free hitman or 10% off.
Yeah.
How pissed off is the next guy? Because, like, the next one would have been free because it's, like, the 19th time, right?
So it depends. George, is it by the firearm or by, like, the guy who's renting it out, you know?
Well, I don't know. Could maybe it was the same hitman, maybe. I don't know. That's a good question.
And well, you would think if it was the same hitman after 19 times, he must have spent enough money to have just bought his own.
Well, that's true.
Do they not have a rent-to-own program?
Probably. Also, some people can't make the down payment. They have to...
Their credit rating's too low.
Yeah.
It's a terrible thing, you know. Being a hitman, it's hard to get good credit. All right. So, moving on to what's new in the industry. Mike, what's new?
All right. Well, I received my new Persec Aware belt just this week. This week or last week, can't remember. Anyways, I just received it, and I had been talking with him over quite a bit of time so that I could get just what I wanted, because I wanted a new, something specifically for IDPA. So we came up with doing a 1.5-inch doubled up webbing. It has a Cobra buckle on it, no molly, no Velcro, so it's very plain. So some of the things I really like about this is it is super light. So compared to all my other gun belts, this thing is incredibly light. Also, for how thin it is, I think he had measured it at 3/16 of an inch, so this thing is thin. It is really rigid. Like, you hold it by the buckle, and it just sticks straight out. Like, there's not a lot of downward slope to it, if that makes sense to someone. So it's super rigid. And one of the great things about it, I found when I shot my match this weekend, is I didn't actually need to crank it down tight. Most belts I have, even like my inside-outside belt, which is, once again, an incredibly stiff belt, I still feel the need to crank it down tight to keep it from moving around. This belt, just, I set it up, it was, you know, comfortable, and it didn't move at all. And yeah, and it looked absolutely fantastic. It actually, I was thinking about it afterwards, and I was thinking, oh, this belt looks so good. I could almost just use this as my everyday belt, just to wear around.
That's what I do.
Yeah, well, with everyone using, you know, everyone getting big fancy belt buckles, no one would notice the difference that there's a Cobra buckle on it. And besides that, it's very inconspicuous, so it's a great belt.
What's a Cobra buckle?
How do I describe it? It's, you'd see it on a lot of, air quote here, tactical gear. You also see it on, I think, climbing gear. So, the part that goes in, so it like clicks together, and then there's two little, I don't know what to call them, little levers that you have to push to unbuckle it. And it's meant to have, the reason why they use it for like climbing it, because it supposedly is like locked together so well that it takes like tons of force to pull it apart.
It's really strong and it won't open under stress. So if you're pulling your belt apart, you can't disengage. Oh. You can't disengage the thing.
Yeah. And the only kind of downside I had to it was my shorts, they're 1.5-inch buckle or loops in them. Well, with 1.5-inch belt, the Cobra buckle is actually 1¾ because it's a little bit bigger, so I had to take the buckle off. But that was no big deal because once you have your belt set up, there's almost like a bit of an indentation of where you like to put the buckle itself. So it's very easy to get right back on. And the other thing I had when I first got it, I used TechLock. It's from Blade-Tec. It's a way to attach your holsters and mag pouches to your belt. It's actually so thin that the TechLock could actually slide around. So I could slide my holster around on my belt. Mind you, when it came time for the match, I didn't have that issue at all. Everything stayed where it should have, so it was good.
You can't use an inner belt on for IDPA, right?
That's correct.
Okay, because I was going to say, like, with the with his inner outer belt or belt system, when you Velcro it to the inner belt, it would hold your tech lock in place.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't be an issue.
Yeah, but with I-Corps and their rules, it just, you can't do that, so. Yeah, but I thought it was a great belt, so I would recommend anyone, like, to me, this is either you want just an everyday belt, or if you want a belt for IDPA, I'd say get a hold of Persec and let them know. Ask him for, I don't know, what do we call this belt? If they're not the new shooter candidate, the IDPA belt.
The Hissen belt.
The Hissen belt, there you go. Tell him you want the Hissen belt, and he'll say, who the hell is that?
That guy from shooter Canada. Oh!
Wait a second.
First, how did I not know it was in him?
Yeah, awesome.
Cool. All right, well, this brings us to our main topic. Are you still awake, babe?
Dun, da, da, da.
I take that as a yes. So this week, it's only been, you know, we've only been together for, 5.5 years, and she's finally taken the leap and took her PAL and RPAL course. And that's what she did this week, or this weekend, rather. So we thought that we would interview Wanda and talk to her about her experience with the course. So welcome aboard, Wanda.
Thanks.
Now, wait, like the boat.
Oh, no, I don't. I refuse.
Okay, never mind.
Well, you have to explain it now. George wants me, when we go sailing, the captain gets on board the boat first. And he actually wants me to stand on the dock and ask permission to come aboard captain.
No, but what are you supposed to say? What's the line?
Permission to come aboard captain.
No, ahoy, permission to come aboard.
Yeah. And I refuse. I won't do it.
Do you make him say it to you when you push him off the boat and you have to swim back on?
Right? Good point.
Mike, you're not helping.
I never said I was here to help.
Oh, funny. So, yeah, I took my PAL and my RPAL. I did the PAL Friday night. It was five hours Friday night. And then up early Saturday morning. And all day Saturday, and the exams were all Saturday afternoon. And then Sunday was the RPAL with the same sort of structure. classes in the morning and then tests in the afternoon and stuff.
Okay, so let's walk through the process just to kind of get to Friday night.
Sure.
So what did you do as far as contacting or even knowing who to contact for a course?
Sure. Well, actually, I looked on the, because George is a member of the gun club. Am I allowed to say the name? Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Kremlin, right? You belong to Kremlin Gun Club. Is that what the actual name of it is?
Kremlin Sportsman Association.
Yeah, there you go. So I looked on their website, and on their website is an instructor course, firearmsafety.ca, the website that's run by the instructor, Sue Ruger. And I contacted her and registered a couple of weeks ago, met up with her and gave a deposit and got my textbook and some homework and stuff that we had to have done for the weekend. So I've spent the last 2 weeks reading through the manual. There was a lot. I've been shooting with George for 5 years, and I thought I knew quite a bit. I was really kind of surprised when I got the textbook and there was really a lot I didn't know. So I feel very green all over again.
That's funny.
So you did your non-restricted and restricted in one weekend?
Yep, I did. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So the first night, on Friday night, I got there, and the first thing they do is they decide, because this is all new shooters, right? Unlike me, most of the people in the room had never shot a gun before, ever. So they started right off with doing who's left or right eye dominant. So I'm left eye dominant, but I'm right-handed. So, and I can't shoot left because I have my defib and pacemaker on my left chest. So, and it's right in the crux of where you want to put in your butt stop. So I have to put it on my right side. So they were trying to figure out how I can shoot right but be left eye dominant. So they gave me a pair of safety glasses with just taped over the left side so that I could use my right eye and still have the peripheral vision all the way around the field. So I don't know. Do you think that's going to work?
That'd be a great question for Thomas. Oh, that's right. Thomas is in here.
It works for the most part. I think the only time that it really comes into play is if you try to use, because when you have both eyes open, you have more peripheral vision.
Yeah.
So it really comes into play if you ever want to do any of the shotgun sports. So when you're trying to, like, track a clay flying through the air.
Right.
You benefit a lot from having both eyes open. But I see tons of people who do the tape over the one eye kind of thing, so.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's cool.
Well, it's kind of like golf, right? If you go back 20 years ago or something like that, you know, there were no left-handed instructors. So if you want to learn how to get good, you pretty much had to swing right-handed. So I think it kind of, the same thing happened with shotgun sports. So if you were left-hand or left-eye dominant, it just meant you just put a piece of tape over your left eye.
Hmm.
Yeah. So, I only wore the glasses for once, but of course in the classroom, we're not pulling any triggers and there's no real target to aim at and look at sort of thing. So, We'll have to see what that's like at the range and stuff. And then we did a little bit of classroom stuff. So they went over the safety thing, the ACTS and the PROVE. Do you guys remember what the acronym stands for?
If I say yes, will you ask me what it means?
Well, Benny had Cole's notes, right?
Well, it's pretty much just make sure the gun, assume the gun is loaded and then make sure it isn't.
Yeah. So that's A, that's the first one, assume the firearm is loaded.
C is control the muzzle.
Right.
Finger off the trigger.
Yeah.
Finger off the trigger. And then S is just see that it's unloaded, so go to your prove, right?
Oh, okay.
So then you go to prove, so P is point in the safest direction. and then remove.
I thought you were gonna make the guys do it.
Okay, well, remove all ammunition, and then O is.
Although it's sounding like somebody's been Googling.
Observe the chamber.
Ah.
Somebody's Googled it.
No, I didn't actually. I remember prove. It's the S on axe that I always forget.
Yeah, and then V is.
Verify the feeding path.
That's right. And the E is.
Point the gun at yourself.
Yeah, right?
Oh, remember how we said don't point the gun at yourself? Yeah, now point the gun at yourself or you'll fail the test.
Yeah, you can't sweep anybody in the room, but you can point it at yourself.
Yeah. Like your, you know, the one organ that kind of keeps you, well, there's lots of organs that keep you alive, but one of the most important ones.
Yeah. Yeah, that was weird for me. At first, it felt very scary to look down the bore of a gun, but...
I know, when I took the course, I kind of brought that up. And I'm like, I've never heard of anyone actively telling you to look down the barrel. Like, it just seems a little odd. And the response back is, yeah, but you've just proved that it's empty.
So what's with the first rule?
Well, I know, it's completely contradictory. Like, I get it. The instructors have no choice. It's the RCMP that create the course, and they have to teach it the way the RCMP tell them to, right? But it seems a little contradictory that you teach them to look down the barrel, but then automatically fail them if they sweep somebody. Well, you've just swept your own head.
Yeah.
But it's an automatic fail if you sweep any part of your body.
Yeah.
And that's why when you take anyone out who's just taken their PAL course, you tell them, now ignore axe and prove. Just assume the gun's loaded and make sure it's safe. Don't look down the barrel.
Yeah.
But then, people say don't look down the barrel, but then she showed all kinds of barrels of people that have had exploding barrels.
Yeah. I was going to say, I think that's the big reason why is because of more geared towards things like hunters. Where if you might accidentally dip your muzzle into the dirt or you put your gun down to climb over a fence.
Or snow.
Yeah. I think that's more who is directed at, less so directed at the person who goes to a shooting range where you have, you know, where, like for me, you must shoot your rifle from a bench, right? I'm not dipping it in any mud.
Yeah.
Not even close to it.
Well, and it's
do you want to know what advice they gave us in the Army when we got, like, our flash hider caked in dirt? I'll just leave it. Shoot it out.
Did they really?
Yeah. It takes something really packed into your barrel and, like, extensively down there to actually cause enough pressure for it to go off.
And then they were telling stories, too, of people who aren't paying attention that are looking at game, like, while they're hunting or something, and they'll throw a 20-gauge down a 12-gauge shotgun and then go, oh, I didn't load it, and then throw a 12 in behind it and then double-shoot the gun, right? And then
that's
explode, right?
That's a whole other problem.
Yeah, that's a lot of compounding issues there.
Why are you carrying 20-gauge ammunition on you when you're shooting a 12-gauge?
Yeah, because they say that. Only carry what you're using.
Yeah.
I could see if you're going to the range and you had a 20 and a 12, but if you're going hunting, you only have one gun with you. I think it's actually in the hunting laws in Ontario that you're only allowed to have one gun with you.
Mm-hmm.
So the question of why, you know, it wouldn't make sense why you'd even have a 20 with you.
Yeah, but these
over
are
under?
These are human beings. Why do people do any of the things that some people do, right? You know, mm-hmm. Well, they could have been at their hunting jacket on at the range and sighting in their 20 gauge and their 12 gauge and had a mixture of both shells in their pocket. Thought they grabbed them all out and the 20 was left behind and they go hunting, throw some shells in their pocket. You know, it happens. Things happen. It's like the safeties, right? Like I don't use safeties on my rifles or my pistols because. Like you, Mike, I have to be sitting at a bench to shoot my rifle. The only time my rifle is loaded is when it's on target pointing downrange. The moment that it's no longer on target pointing downrange, it has to be unloaded and empty, right? Or unloaded and axe proved and safe and all the acronyms and alphabet soup, right? So, I've gotten into the habit of not using safeties. If I was a hunter, like when my dad and I have gone backpacking, I've always had the safety on. Because you're walking around with a shotgun that could potentially be loaded, right?
Yeah. Also, if you ever get into action shooting, like when I first started doing 3-gun, it was weird to me to have to use my safety on my shotgun because I never used it. So it's a good right. practice to be in, even if you do have to sit at a bench and shoot from, but...
Mm-hmm.
Safety third.
So we did all that classroom stuff. It was only maybe like an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours at the most, the classroom on Friday night. And the rest of the time, we were on the guns, like actually like practicing the, you know, loading them, unloading them, making sure it's clear and all that stuff. And so they had like all the actions there. They had hinge and bolt and pump and semi-automatic and
lever.
Lever. Yeah. Lever. and they talked about, the musket stuff and that, the muzzle loaders and stuff.
Did you feel like that portion of the course was directed towards hunters specifically?
No, not at all.
Okay.
No, it was, they talked very much about target shooting and stuff. And even though the instructor is an obviously avid hunter, the learning environment was amazing. Like she just made it so friendly and interested and broad spectra of sport, you know, that people are obviously going to be getting into after they get their PAL.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
She's the same person I took my course through, but I did take the hunter course. And her and her husband are her boyfriend. I'm not sure if they're married or not.
I think they're married.
Are they married? They're great advocates for hunting and shooting. During the hunting course, one of the things she really kind of pushed is, you know, when you get home from your hunting trip and you have all your stories and all your pictures, don't focus on the killing. Like the killing. Or the harvesting of the animal, to use proper terminology, is just like one small part of the entire week that you're out or weekend or whatever, right? And to, you know, to share all the other aspects of the trip as well. And don't, cause you generally, if you're going to be telling stories and that, you know, you could be in mixed company and, you know, you could be around people that, you know, may not be as friendly to hunters or gun owners that others may be. And so she's a very smart and great advocate that way.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
Yeah, she was really great. So then and then Saturday again, right back on the guns first thing in the morning and practicing until we were all really confident and well, not confident, but at least could manage.
Comfortable.
Yeah. Yeah. Even some of them, I was nervous with some of them still. Like not so much on Saturday with the rifles and shotguns. I was not so bad, but today with the restricted firearms, I was more nervous. I'm just maybe not so as familiar with them as I am the rifles and stuff, but it was good. And I did well on my testing. They did, they do the written. It's 50 questions. Half of it's true, false, and the other half is multiple choice. And then they do about a 10-minute practical exam where she'll have 5 or 6 guns laying in front of you and you'll just say, pick up the lever action. Oh, sorry. Pick up the lever action and prove it's safe. And then, maybe tell me how you would travel with that one in the car, what you have to do to lock it or do you not lock it or how do you store it at home and pick up the semi-automatic and load 2 rounds. And then they also, during the practical, had cartridges that you had to identify, like rim fire and center fires and the difference between 22s and 12 gauge or whatever, like, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So did you do your non-restricted test, like the testing portion of it on Saturday?
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
so that people that weren't doing the RPAL portion of it just left on Saturday and they were done.
Okay. So how many people did the non-restricted course?
There was 16 in the non-restricted. And you'd be really surprised. There was a third of the class were women. Thomas would be really happy to hear that.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah, they were they were surprised. That's not as common with their classes to have as many girls in the class. But there was five of us and the rest were guys. And then just two didn't do the RPAL. So there was, 13 or 14 of us today.
Okay. And what were the ages like? Were they?
Anywhere between, I don't know, like
early 20s. Like were there 20s, young kids early there?
Early 20s maybe to like my age, you know.
So between 20 and 30 then?
what age is that?
It had a variety of people in their different walks of life.
That's good.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a good variety. So
no one as old as Thomas, but no one else is as old as Thomas.
That's right.
Oh.
And those younger than me.
Can you imagine that person in the class? I remember when they discovered gunpowder.
Well, he would have been able to talk about the muzzle loaders really well by experience, probably, right?
Yeah.
So it was a good ratio of women and stuff. You know what? There was a couple of things that they talked about during the course. I was going to ask you guys what you thought. So, you know how often George cleans his guns, right?
George cleans his guns?
Yeah, he. I have
probably more often than I do.
I've seen him once clean them.
I have seen him clean them once too. I wouldn't really call it cleaning so much as just wiping off.
Well, drying.
Yeah, drying.
Oh yeah, after the maple seed when it rains, that way.
Yeah.
I have seen him at home pull out like the patches and the rods and all that stuff. Yes, the instructor was saying she does it every time she shoots.
Yeah, I don't got that much time.
Me neither.
I generally shoot my guns. Well, I say I shoot them until they start either acting up or if I have what I would like a big match coming up, then I'll clean my guns.
See, I've heard that if you're going to a match, you don't want to bring a clean gun. That you want to have some rounds fired through it.
Well, yes, but the way that I run my guns, my revolver might see 500 rounds, and then all of a sudden, oh, I'm going to a big match next weekend. What's worse, having 1,000 rounds and having a really dirty gun, or having a brand spanking new gun with nothing through it?
I'm going with the philosophy of it's not good to go with a clean gun, because that makes me feel better for not cleaning mine. Makes me feel like a high precision, running gun competitor.
Yeah. My version of cleaning also often just includes running like a boar snake down it and being like, yep, clean enough. Right? When there's those spots where, you know, on your gun where you look at and you're like, oh, there's some dirt there. And you like keep rubbing and rubbing and you find out that it's like an inch thick of just carbon. Like, I clean those spots.
We're terrible. And we're a new shooter podcast.
I just took a little bit of REM oil and sprayed the rails that my slide rides on, and that's it. That's all I did before I went to my service pistol match.
Yeah.
I haven't cleaned that gun in over 1,000 rounds. Maybe almost close to 2,000, actually.
And that's how a lot of my guns run. A lot of times my guns will get cleaned in the winter, just because I have nothing better to do and I can't go shoot, so I'll clean them.
Yes.
But I'm in no rush to get home and clean my guns.
This is the dilemma with when my dad and I go out shooting the SKS and the Mosin, because he buys the surplus ammo that's corrosive.
Yeah.
So you have to run home and clean those ones right away. Well, pretty much you do. Unless you pour some Windex down and you might get a day, but he's pretty good at cleaning them. And he said there was one time he must not have cleaned it very well because it looked like there was some corrosion starting in one of the barrels. So when you shoot corrosive ammo, that's, you know, if you're going to buy one of those guns and get that ammo, that's, then yeah, then you have to clean it right away.
Yeah.
And clean it thoroughly too.
Yeah, that was one of my big reasons why I stopped shooting my SKS. I love shooting it, and I still have probably half a crate worth of corrosive ammo, but it seemed like no matter how hard I tried to, like, get home and clean it as fast as I could, it would always get, like, a little bit of pitting on it, so I just kind of said, screw it, I'm done trying.
Yeah.
I'll just shoot something else.
Yeah. Their argument was kind of, the more you clean your gun, the longer it's going to last for you.
Yeah, I can kind of see that. Like, you put fresh oil in your car every 6 months or whatever, your philosophy is 10,000 kilometers, whatever. And that helps make it run longer. But to me, when they put new oil in, they're not necessarily cleaning out your engine every time. They're just putting oil in. So essentially what Benny said, just spray some REM oil on the rails and you've done your contact points.
Yeah.
Yeah, because every time I think of cleaning your gun, I just think of the story my dad told me where, I forget where it was, but they had to change out the, and this is really obscure, torpedo bays at, they had to change them out because what would happen was the seals weren't sealing anymore because the sailors were being, you know, told, oh, clean it until, you know, it shines. And they were basically wearing away at the seal and killing, disabling their own torpedo base. So,
yeah.
And that happens a lot in the military. So I just, I'm on the hands off approach. So yeah. a little bit of oil, and I haven't touched my Tavor yet. So
yeah.
Jericho's going over 2,000 rounds, and Tavor hasn't been touched.
Yeah. And I think that's where a lot of the philosophy of don't clean your guns right before a major match, because if you improperly put something back in, you break something, whether you know it or not, you know, you don't want to be doing that right before a big match.
Yeah. But
at least not without testing it, but.
Yeah. So then the other thing, of course, amongst all us new shooters sitting in the room while the instructors were busy doing other things, we were all excited talking about first guns. Now, for me, I already have my first gun because I got the Uzcon. Well, I don't physically have it in my hands, sort of, yet.
Yeah, it's been in somebody else's shop since March.
Yeah.
I was going to say, there's a lot of giggling going on.
Well, they've had it a long time. Like, I wanted it nice and pink, right? So they've had it a while. But anyways, so I do have my first gun, but I'm already looking at the Ruger 10/22 for next year as soon as I get my PAL. That'll be the first gun that I'll be purchasing. Because I want to be able to do a maple seed.
I thought George had to buy you the 10/22.
He does. We kind of made a deal because by the time he gets back to work and can afford it, I can afford to buy the gun sooner than he will probably. So I'm going to buy the gun and I'm making him buy the scope, but a really good scope.
I know just the scope for you to tell him to buy.
But not a real scope because that's cruel.
But yeah, so that's the deal. We just recently changed that deal. So the gun is still my birthday present, but I changed it to a scope.
Okay. You're kind of talking a little bit. What were everyone's experience level with firearms in the course?
None. Nobody had any.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Like there was, like, most of the people have never even shot a gun before.
So how did people find it that, like, or get into it?
There was probably, I'd say, I don't know, maybe a third of them, maybe even higher, maybe even half, wanted to do it for work reasons, right? They're either taking police foundations courses or they're wanting to apply as an armored guard.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so they're doing it for work reasons. Then there was some that, just want to do it for hobby, that they just want a new hobby. I'd say it's probably those two reasons that were most of the people were in the class. But I think there was only two or three people that had any shooting experience, and, most had none.
Wow.
Yeah. So then they talked about going to orientations around to different gun clubs and how to pick a gun club, because you want to have that all sort of narrowed down before your pal arrives, so that as soon as your pal arrives, you can start shooting at a club somewhere.
That is awesome. I wish I had that.
Yeah. Because you can do the orientation classes without your pal.
Yeah. Well, I didn't, because I knew no one in firearms when I started, we were just kind of walking around blind. We had no idea what to look for. And it was just, oh, you'll take my money? I guess I'll be your member. Like,
yeah. They just sort of said a little bit, shop around, talk to some members, talk to the club people that are running the clubs and stuff. I mean, for me, it's easy because I'm going to be going where George goes, right? So,
yeah.
I'm, and there's only two clubs really close by, really, anyways. So,
yeah, well, the one's not even really that close. Like,
no.
How far is Elmer? That's going to be a good half hour drive at least, eh?
Yeah, at least maybe 45 minutes from my place.
Yeah,
if not longer.
When you're in London, and you're taking the course in London, yeah, it's shop around, but where are you going to go? Like, really, there's Sarnia, there's London, there's Elmer, Kitchener, and I think
all those places have openings?
Well, yeah, well, they're all like 2 hours or more from you.
Wait a minute, do they have openings? Like, gun clubs can actually say, no, we're not taking members right now?
Yep, they do cap. Like, Silverdale is capped at 300. They're no longer taking members as of 2 years ago. I'm currently trying to get into Port Perry, but they have a limit on how many they allow additional every year and how many they're allowed in total, I believe. There are way too many shooters in the GTA for the amount of ranges there are in the GTA. So.
Oh, that's good to know. At London, at Crumlin, they'll take your money.
I'm not driving to London.
I've never heard of any limits, or because I think we've got, we're over either at 600 or just over 600 members.
Mm-hmm.
Which is strange because I don't think I've ever seen more than 20 people at the range at any given time.
Well, that's why you can have a huge number, right?
And that's right. That'd be on the high end. Like on average, I can go to the pistol range and there may be one or two other people there. I go to the rifle range, there may be anywhere from maybe 2 to 5 people on average.
Yeah. I know my club is reaching its maximum right now, and they've kind of said, you know, we're reaching our maximum, so just kind of keep your eyes out, and, you know, if it's not busy, let us know, and we'll just up the number of members we can have.
Right.
Right. But if people start noticing, oh, it's starting to get crowded, starting to, you know, rub more elbows with people, then they'll just stop it where it is. Because obviously the more members you have, the more money you're bringing in, the better the club can do, or at least the more the club can do with the money.
Yeah.
That wasn't even discussed today. It was like, the world is your oyster, pick a club.
Yeah.
Well, that's good advice. Very good advice. And we are kind of fortunate in the London area, because if you don't mind the drive, you could, it's like East Elgin. I've been to East Elgin before, they used to do an annual open house shoot, and they've got great facilities out there, but I don't know what it's like to be a member out there, because I'm not a member. Oh, there's another one out near Tillsonburg too. I've done a cowboy shoot out there. So there's a couple out that way.
You shoot cowboy?
I haven't for a couple of years. I haven't shot cowboy this year because of my back, and last year I was just so busy with work and
all. I'm hearing is excuses, George.
Did I tell you? Did I mention I got a boat?
With your flippy floppies?
I'm gonna rename the Willow to George's unbuilt AR.
I thought you were gonna say the Whiner.
Aww.
Aren't you glad you came on tonight, George?
Yeah. See, if you come on more often, we can spread all this out over a longer period of time, and it's not so bad. But if you come only once in a while, it builds up.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got it all pinned up.
So the next steps now, they're just, it's just the paperwork now. So the instructors send all the exam test results and everything to CFO, and then they put their stamp on it and mail out two copies of each of them, so the PAL and the RPAL, and back to me, and then that can be attached with my RCMP application and my picture and my $80 for both. And then yep. The waiting game begins.
Well, it's not $80 for both, it's $80 total, right?
Yeah, total, yeah.
Okay.
That's good.
Yeah. I was going to say, because when I renewed my license, it was only $80, and that got me both.
Yeah, it's 60 for your PAL and 80 for your PAL and RPAL.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what kind of guns did they have for the testing part of the RPAL course?
They had a semi-automatic, and then they had a double-action revolver and a single-action revolver.
Okay, that's good. I remember mine didn't have the double-action revolver.
Yeah, they had both. And she had a couple of other guns there, too. She tested on those three. And she had a couple of other guns there, too. But to be honest, I didn't play with them at all because I just didn't want to confuse myself. I was having a hard time getting those three down. So, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Better to knock.
And she had two of each. Like, so she had two of the double, two of the single, and two of the semi-automatic. Okay. And they were a little bit different. Like, the semi-automatics were both slides, but one had a safety, a lever safety on the side of it. The other one had a built-in safety of some sort. I'm not sure. But, and then the revolvers, two of each. So yeah, so there was lots of guns to play with, that's for sure.
Did George prepare you at all by giving you his version of the course, or? Like, I know you've shot quite a few times, but did he kind of?
No, I really didn't know what to expect for the course. I kind of,
Would you want me teaching you?
I was actually surprised into the course, Mike?
No, but that doesn't mean that you wouldn't have.
Yeah. I actually was surprised at how hands-on it was. I thought it was going to be more lecture and sort of head-based knowledge stuff, but they really were really good at prepping you beforehand with homework and reading assignments and everything, so that by the time you got to the course, it was just a little bit of lecture and lots of hands-on.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
When I'm on the range, especially with the new shooter, I know I joke around and I give the persona that I don't care about safety, but I do care about safety.
Yeah.
I've been complimented many a times by other members when I've been showing a new person and they're like, oh my goodness, I've seen other people bring people out to the range and they scare me. They're like, I can't believe like all the things you go through. And I don't call it axe improve and go through like each acronym, but I go through all the steps. I make them look in the chamber. Okay, there's nothing there. Look down where the magazine comes in. There's no magazine. Cycle the bolt. You know, make sure it's empty. Put it down. And so, you know, I give the persona that I don't care about safety, but I do very much care about safety.
Yeah,
I just don't care about safeties.
When I first started shooting with George, there was lots of times he was like, just put it down. Put it down for a minute. Let me give you a little bit more instruction. And then you can pick it up again.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Well, and it's, you know, you got to, especially if you're bringing somebody really green, one thing you need to be very aware of is body language and how is the person handling it. Because if they start becoming overwhelmed, that's when guns start sweeping people. It's when accidents happen. If the person's getting overwhelmed, I just say to him, okay, put it down, just put it down, okay, let it go, and then I'll take control of it, and, you know, and then the person can get their composure, and like, okay, are you ready, are you good, okay, let's go, and then, you know, fire up a couple rounds, so.
Yeah.
So I don't even bring people to the range before they, without having them handle all my firearms and being familiar with them, just because I think that's our range policy, so I have to take, everyone comes over to my house. They handle all my firearms. They ask any questions they need to, this normally takes about an hour. And then we drive to the range and go to the range to actually shoot guns.
Oh, that's a good idea.
I've done that in the past, but it's hard with some people, right? If you're taking someone from work,
right,
then sometimes you just end up meeting them there. But yeah, when I've had buddies who come up for like the weekend, I'll do that the night before or something like that, so that they'll have like 24 hours to ask questions.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we, and like George does, we did do some dry firing and stuff with like center fire stuff. We would do some dry fire.
Yeah.
We just never looked down the barrel.
No. No, 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 no.
Yeah, that was, yeah. But it's, anyways, I can't say enough great things about this instructor. She was really great. It just, it was a really friendly environment, and I'm a really anxious test person. I get really, really anxious during the written test and the practical test. And although I did well, I did fine. The writtens especially were, you know, high 90s or whatever. But I just was so anxious, and she was really good at just calming everybody's nerves and making for, what did she say? It's not a test. It's your celebration of knowledge.
Okay.
So who was it again that gave you the course?
It's her website. Her name is Sue Ruger, and her website is www.firearmsafety.ca. And her course schedule, I believe, is on her website and her email and everything. And she does the PAL, the RPAL, and the Hunter's course.
Okay, that's awesome. Yeah. So if you're in the London area and you're looking for a highly recommended instructor, there's someone you can get in contact with.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think London has a few instructors. And I went through Sue as well. And after listening to this, she may not want me advertising that. Maybe she'll pay me not to admit that. He's not a former student of mine. Honest, he's not.
She did ask for a link to the show. She wanted to hear it afterwards, so I'll email her a link to the show.
That's why I said
the opinions said on this show represent neither private nor public entities, and are that solely the people speaking them.
She may disavow me as a former student, but she's an amazing instructor. When Wanda said had mentioned that, because I think didn't one of your coworkers had looked into another instructor or something.
One of my coworkers looked into another instructor. Yeah.
Yeah, and I was like, I said I went through Sue and she's amazing. And
I guess you have to be careful. There are some people that say that they are accredited gun instructors and charge huge amounts of money for the course and are actually not affiliated with RCMP.
Oh, really?
So it used to be able to do that, but I don't think you can do that anymore. Because what used to happen is they used to say, oh, yeah, take the course with us, and then just go to this place to do the test. But now that you have to do the course, can't do that anymore.
Oh, you can't test anymore.
Yeah. Oh, so you were technically challenging the test.
Yeah, but you thought you took the course. I actually called the RCMP about someone that showed up like this, because when I was originally looking, and they're like, yeah, well, they're not actually, they haven't like done anything illegal, so we can't stop them. But yeah, they're not affiliated. So that's what you have
to
check.
I know even her PowerPoint program like is directly from the RCMP.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they're given the course, right? So yeah. Like the whole, you know, it's okay to criticize the whole, you know, don't sweep anyone, but you know, look down your barrel, because it's kind of silliness from the RCMP, right? Like, you know, I was saying to Wanda, like, or was it my dad? I can't remember. It was one of the two. Like, you pull your rifle out, you do your action prove, you look down the barrel, and then if you were to sweep somebody, it's an automatic fail. But hold on. Or if you even swept yourself, it'd be an automatic fail. But wait a minute. You just told me to look down my barrel. Is that not sweeping myself? Well, yeah, but you just proved it was safe. Okay, but now if I were to take the barrel and sweep, go to put it down and say I swept my leg, it'd be a fail. But it's proven safe. You know what I mean? Like, it just, yeah. I have a hard time with that logic, and I get it. It's just, it's the course material that they have to teach, right? They have to teach it, and, you know, and I get looking down the barrel to a certain extent because you're looking for squibs, obstructions, you know, that sort of thing. But I just, it's a red tape bureaucratic course.
Yeah, find a squib rod and just run it down the barrel, and that'll give you just as much information.
Yeah, but you know what I mean? Like, that's a perfect example of bureaucracy. You sweep yourself, it's an automatic fail, but we're going to teach you to sweep your eyeball across the barrel.
Yeah.
They did have rods for us to check the restricted firearms today.
That's good.
Yeah, so we didn't have to look down the barrel of those ones. We just put sticks down them.
Yeah, because you can't do that with a single action, right? Right, George?
No, because there's no...
So then to see. Yeah.
Because... Did Sue have those little plastic things with the elbow?
Yes, yes. Put
in the chamber, right? And it kind of deflects the light up the barrel.
Yeah. We had those.
With a single action revolt, you can't do that because you don't have access to the cylinder. Like you got to disassemble the gun to get the cylinder out, right? For a single action.
Yep.
So anything else, babe?
No, that's it, unless you have any other questions, but it was great. I loved it.
There was one other thing, and we kind of got distracted, was weren't you saying that they're also talking about recommendations for your first pistol?
Yeah, we talked about that a little bit. Oh, she was, they were saying the Rugers, and for handguns, she was suggesting the Ruger Mark IV. As a good gun to start with.
It's a nice 22.
Yes. They were just saying, you know, start with 22s and get some good marksmanship on the 22s and then you can graduate up to, you know, the 30 gauges or whatever and
9mm.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just found
a really nice deal on a Jericho on GOC. Oh, no, CGN, sorry.
I misunderstood Wanda when she was telling me this, and I'm like, what? I'm like, no, you're not going out buying a Ruger Mark anything. I'm like, you have a bookmark to shoot. And she's like, no, she was recommending this just for everybody. And I was like, oh, well, yeah, okay, then that's a good recommendation. I'm like, you got a bookmark. It's a 22 pistol, and it's a very accurate, great pistol.
Yeah, that's a good one. And I'm like, and it's pink.
Yeah, and it's pink. And I'm like, no. Our next pistol is going to be a 9mm, not another 22.
Oh, George, should I send you the link? Comes with 5 mags.
All right, when are you going to get that pistol, George?
Did I tell you guys?
Right after the AR is done?
I got a boat. I have a 24-foot sailboat.
That's nice. Can you put 9mm in it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. As long as it's, will it stay afloat if you put 9mm in it?
As long as it's being shot out of a non-restricted carbine.
There you go.
I can put all the 9mm in my boat I want.
Actually, I'm pretty sure there are restrictions on how much you could probably transport in your boat.
I would assume that it has to do with the boat sinking before it had to do with, like, amount powder of rounds, though. Hey, yeah.
This is a bit of a sidebar here, and this kind of caught me off guard a little bit. But we had bought a bunch of ammunition, or I had bought a bunch of ammunition, and then I got back to my parents' place, and then Wanda needed to take the car out for something, and we weren't sure about the legalities of her driving around with the ammunition. There was no firearms, just ammunition.
You just need a pal to purchase, not to possess.
Yeah, and I'm like, I'm pretty sure it's okay. And she's like, well, maybe you should take it out. I'm like, all right, well, I'll take it out, and then I'll call. They put me through to the Ministry of Natural Resources of Ontario, the explosion division, the explosive something division, the division that deals with all the explosives and legislation regarding explosives.
Yeah, because that's Ministry of Natural Resources and all explosive or all ammunition fall under explosives.
Yeah, but it's the small arms ammunition has an exemption from the laws govern a lot of the stuff. And so we got chit-chatting, and he's like, well, the way he, because we're back and forth, and he's like, well, let me pull up the legislation. So he's reading it, because he's like, well, I don't think you should be storing it in your car overnight. And I'm like, okay, well, what does it say that the storage has to be? And so he goes, so he's reading it over, and I'm like, I don't remember all the bullet points, right? And I said to him, I said, I hate to say this, and I don't want to be, you know, that guy. I said, but my car meets every single one of those requirements. It's a locked object. It's the ammunition's locked. It's not in direct sunlight. It's not what, you know, all the bullet points.
But it's not vented. Doesn't it have to be vented?
No.
I don't think it does.
No, I don't think that was one of the.
I think that's a gas issue.
I think that's an old thing.
So.
That used to be in there.
So, anyways, he says, just store it in your house. I said, okay. Because then, remember we did that show about what is actually. A gun safe under the letter of the law, and those stack on metal cabinets actually qualify as a gun safe under the law, right? But nobody in their right mind is going to look at a stack on metal cabinet and go, oh yeah, that's a safe. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was likening it to that, to this guy. And I think I was getting on his nerves because he was like, it says to be stored in a home or a dwelling. So I would go with that.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, but I'm just saying, I got to make a solid argument that my car qualifies for every single bullet point that you just gave me. I'm like, but I'm not going to push the issue because I don't want to be that guy.
Yeah. Well, the other thing, too, is technically if it's still in the car, is it still not being transported?
No. If the car's parked. If it's in transport, then yes. This came up when people asked about having firearms in their, leaving firearms in their vehicle. If you actually are transporting your firearm, then yes. So if you're going to and from some location, but if you've reached that location, then it then turns into storage, and then you have to treat it as if you're storing your firearm in your vehicle, which you apparently are allowed to do. It's just you have to, like, for non-restricted, you have to put a trigger lock and all that jazz.
Right. Yeah, because if you're transporting a firearm, a non-restricted rather, you don't need a trigger lock on it. But the moment you stop, you now need a trigger lock on it. And the moment you leave your vehicle, you need a trigger lock on it because it's no longer in transport. It's now in storage, right?
I'm not sure when exactly it turns from transport to storage, but if you left it, well, if it depends to what. I would say it would depend on to what degree. So if you're leaving your vehicle to, say, either go into a hotel, that would be a very big question in the eyes of the law. If you're going in for a meal to a restaurant, I would say most people would agree you're still in transport. But the hotel would be a very good argument. Do you want to bring your stuff up to the hotel and then leave it in the hotel room? Or do you want to leave it in your car? Because technically you're still on, I would say you're still in transport, assuming you're in stolen. Whatever.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know. And you know, like when we went to Michigan, had a guy kind of try to scoff at me about, you know, oh, well, you still got your trigger lock on your rifle for, oh, you know, this is America. Oh. Ironically, it was a Canadian that was kind of scolding me, and I'm like. So what? I got a trigger lock on it. Like, it came from inside my house. I put it in my car. Just because I'm transporting it doesn't mean I'm going to take the stupid trigger lock off just because the law says I can drive with a... Like, I'm like, are you a moron? Like, what kind of planet are you on? Like, but, you know, so for me, it's... As soon as I'm done with them and they're packing, I'm packing them up, trigger locks go on because... Why wouldn't I put the trigger lock on it? Because the trigger lock's going to be on it when I get home. So,
yep.
Now, mind you, I do have a couple firearms that I don't have trigger locks for. Because
Chain Tire is having a sale right now. I don't know if it's
my number of firearms I own have exceeded the number of trigger locks I do have. So when I do take wholesale firearms out to the range, that's one thing I do have to be mindful of, is that I do have firearms in the car that aren't trigger locked. So I just make a point of, I just don't stop anywhere. You know, I don't stop anywhere. Like, if I go to a drive-thru or something like that, like obviously I would, but, you know, I don't stop and leave my car for any reason. I just range home and back. I don't know what the laws are, but I know that I'm within the laws by not leaving my vehicle and a rifle unattended without a trigger lock. So I just, if in doubt, trigger lock it. Because you're not gonna get in trouble for having too much locks.
This is true. No. So like I was saying, I don't know about you guys, where you guys are, but at least in Toronto, 3-pack combination or key trigger locks at Canadian Tire are for like 50% off. So $14.99 to $16.99.
Well, that's a good deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, if it's Canadian Tire, I'm pretty sure it'd be everywhere.
I think Canadian Tire also, they've got gun safes on right now.
No, they always have
storage cabinets. They always have them on sale.
Yeah. No. I don't know how good the sale is, but...
I was going to say, Wanda, are you planning on jumping in this with both feet, getting the cabinet right away? Going to fill it up before your license even comes in?
No, I won't get it before the license comes in.
No?
No. I won't have anything to store in it.
That's a different kind of problem that can be easily solved with George's credit card.
I was going to say, well, you got a news con. Oh, wait, that's right. You haven't had it since March.
Oh, well, no, but I can't possess a firearm yet, right? So.
No, but I can. And I'd be more than happy to possess your firearms.
I know. Pink or not, you're happy to have them.
Hey, you know what's funny is because Thomas, this is completely unrelated. Thomas lives near Oshawa, where Canadian Gun Works, who've had Wanda shotgun since March, and still it's not done. So he had offered to go and check and see if it was ready, and if it was ready, he'd pick it up for us, right? And I made we were chatting, texting back and forth, and I was like, I'm sure if you wanted to take it to the range and blast off some rounds, Wanda wouldn't mind. And he's like, are you kidding me? He goes, it's going to come home and go straight in the safe, and it won't come out until you guys pick it up. I'm like, seriously? He goes, yeah, because I'm not going to shoot a pink gun. And I'm like, seriously? He goes, listen, I'm not sure he wants me sharing this or not, but it's going on the show. He's like, I'm not as secure in my manhood as you are. I can't go to the range with a pink gun. I'm like, I do it every time I go shooting pistol. I've got a black gun, or I guess I got 3 black guns and a pink one. If I want to shoot my pink one. I'm like, I don't care. Won't matter to me.
Well, it's mostly black. It's got a little bit of pink on it, but it's mostly black.
Which one?
The buck mark. The buck mark.
No, it's got mostly pink. It's a lot of pink.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
So I thought that was kind of funny.
But the Oozcon's going to be like Pepto-Bismol pink.
It's going to be awesome. I still want to take it out to Kremlin on Trap Night. Give all the FUDs a heart attack, an aneurysm. They're going to be like grasping their chest. Oh, what is that? Oh, you're defiling our trap field. And I'm going to be smiling the whole time going, yeah, baby. Chick-chick. With my 10-round banana clip.
10-round banana clip.
Because I saw a man in half with that banana clip.
I know, right? The only thing I don't like about the Oozcon is you get 10 rounds in there, and you start blasting away, and next thing you know, it's like it's empty, and you're like, I swear that was like 3 shots. And then you look around you at all the casings on the ground, and you're like, that's just lying. It was 3 shots. I could have sworn it was 3 shots. Goes by.
It's a very nice gun.
Don't believe the evidence.
It's a very nice gun. It's very smooth.
I love that gun. Love it.
I do too.
Then why don't you marry it, Tom or George? Jeez.
I'm going to marry it and then get a room. And that's as far as I'm going with that because it's none of your
business. Room.
Anyways. I think that was, I think that's it. Anything else, guys? Wanda?
Nope.
No.
Okay.
But so you would say, Wanda, that was a positive experience and that you would encourage anyone else who's thinking about getting a license to do it?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I don't know what took me 5 years to do it. It took me a long time, but I'm glad that it's finally done. Yeah, it was really great. I loved it.
That's good.
Yeah. And I'm very glad you did it, too, because now we can shoot side by side and I don't have to be kind of hovering over you, watching you. And now I can just pull up the guns and say, there you go. Load them, shoot them yourself.
Yeah. Yep, I'm looking forward to the addicting gun collecting hobby.
Oh, it's addicting.
Yeah, I know. I'm already thinking I'd love to get my black badge and three guns look cool and
well, I'm already. If you want to get into that stuff, we're far away, but if you ever come up here, Sarah and I will take you and George, well, if George ever shoots anymore, out to a match.
There you go. That's the plan.
There you go.
But we are travelers and we do like traveling. And you know, it's only maybe like, you know, a 1 month trip to get up to, you know, Ottawa in my boat.
Oh.
Well, actually you could. You could take the boat up to Kingston and then take the Rideau Canal and that takes you literally right to Ottawa.
I know.
So there you go. You could actually do it.
Don't encourage him. Don't encourage him.
Don't worry, Wanda. You could just drive up. Or take the train.
I took the train once. That was fun.
He needs a first mate to sail that far.
Isn't that what the dog's for?
I was thinking of, you know, 20-year-old blonde.
What?
Are you going to get a golden retriever?
Next one, Mike.
Well, if I got a golden retriever 20 years old, he'd be pretty much dead by that point.
Hey, George, you're the one asking.
I'm so dead. Wanda's gonna pistol whip me.
And that would be assault with a deadly weapon.
Yep. So, alright, moving on. Let's wrap this baby up. Events. Who wants to take event number one?
I'll take number two.
Okay, I'll take number one then. Event one, Select Shooting Supplies Range Day is on September 23rd. It is at Galt Sportsman Club and is being put on by Select Shooting Supply. Just to note again, do not bring your own guns, please. And if I didn't say it's Saturday, September 23rd, 10 to 4.
So, Florenceville Shooting Sports Club 2017 annual fundraiser draw. Only 400 tickets to be sold, $20 per ticket. Tika T3 Sporter and 223 Remington, a Henry 22 lever action rifle, or $400 cash, binoculars, Oakleys, ticket location, Green Diamond Outfitter, Woodstock, New Brunswick, Curry's Ace Hardware, Woodstock, New Brunswick, or EMT to contact us.fssc@gmail.com. Links in the show notes. Does anyone know when that's over?
No idea.
Okay, fine.
That may have already ended.
No, I think it's to the end of September for some reason.
Yeah.
Okay. Women of the Outdoors Range Day, Sunday, October 1st. And where is this?
Silverdale Gun Club.
Pistol. Where does it say silver?
At the very top, in tiny little writing.
There. And on the bottom.
Silverdale Gun Club, and pistol shooting, rifle marksmanship, trap shooting, archery. This is hosted by Amanda Lynn Mayhew, on behalf of Silverdale Gun Club, right there. I guess that's where it says it. $60 registration, start time 8 a.m., and there's a website, but it's screenshotted, and I can't see it, so.
Links are in the show notes.
Links are in the show notes. Event number four.
It's the CCFR Ladies Goose Hunt Contest. So this is a draw for women only, sorry Benny.
Aww.
To go on a guided goose hunt. It's hosted by Kelly Kincaid and Robert Foote. You must have a CCFR membership, PAL, license to hunt, migratory birds, own gun and ammo, and be willing to travel to Kingston area. The exact location will be determined. And the hunt date is October 14th. And the draw date is on October 1st. So if you're interested, get in on that quickly.
I almost feel like changing my gender for a day. Almost.
Well, in Canada, you can actually say that. You can show up.
You could call yourself gender fluid. That way you can just flip back and forth whatever you want.
Yeah. It's a brave new world, Benny.
You just got to be brave enough to step in it.
Yeah, not happening. I'll think event number 6.
Don't actually say it, though. Don't say the title.
The second annual Heck Cancer Charity Shoot. That's the approved censor name. Proceeds for this year's event will be donated directly to Mr. Scott H., who has stage 3 modular thyroid cancer. Your support is greatly appreciated and will make a dramatic impact to the lives of Scott and his family. It is happening Saturday, October 21st, 2017 at Guelph Rod and Gun Club. There, it's being sponsored by Lands Shooting Supplies, Ragnarok Tactical, Grey Fox Strategic, Titan Tactical, TDSA, Can't Read the Fresh Something, and Firearms Outlet. I'll tell you people now, Fresh Collective. Oh, right. That's Angela's company. So, yeah, that's it.
All right, so listener email. Does anyone want to take Kyle's email?
Sure, I'll take first email. So, hey guys, my favorite 22 is my Savage Mark II TRRSR. I bought it so I could be competitive in my club's 22 Precision Tactical matches based on 22 Marksman Challenge on YouTube. And my score has gotten better each match. I'm still testing ammo to see which is the most accurate, but it's sub-MOA gun. There's a lot of work I can still do to tweak out every last bit of accuracy. I put almost 1,500 rounds through it this year and have fired no other gun than 22 this year other than this one. So that's awesome that you found a nice gun.
Now, is this a Donnelly?
No, this is like a bolt-action like rifle.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, it's the tactical model, so it comes with the, what do you call that? The Picatinny rail that kind of is on the side and on the top, so I guess you could put a flashlight on it.
Oh, okay.
And I think it had the double studs up front, so you can put a bipod and a sling on it at the same time. Bull barrel. Nice gun.
George, you take this one. I'll take the next one.
Oh, the next one's got a pistol. That's what threw me off. I really enjoy your show on 22s. I have a bit of a 22 addiction. That's okay. There's probably a therapy group, but just go shoot more 22s and don't waste your time with groups. rifles.
Isn't that the whole point of shooting 22s, though, is to get the best group?
Yeah, that is your group therapy.
Yeah, there you go. Excellent point. So he's got Ruger American Rimfire 22 long rifle. I don't know why I said long rifle, 22. Ruger 10-22 takedown, Smith & Wesson MMP AR-15-22, and a Henry Lever 22. And then this guy does look his 22s. Kind of jealous. It's a nice list. Handguns, Vorkorsen Stingray, a Ruger MK4. There's the MK4, babe.
Yeah, I just saw that.
The Ruger MK2, Smith & Wesson 6.17, Ruger single 6 convertible 22, and 22 WMR. What's the WMR?
Winchester Magnum.
Is that Magnum round?
Is that what that one is?
I think so. I think it's 22 Magnum.
Yeah.
Let's go with that.
Yeah, we'll call it Winchester Magnum Rimfire. I just made that up.
Yes.
That sounds intelligent. Send us your hate
mail, people.
The GS.
Every time we screw up, I just see listener feedback.
We were looking at those, Jessica and I, my youngest, because they had some pink ones at Bullseye. And I liked it, unfortunately, because she's so young and her hands were so little. She couldn't rack it and kind of manipulate it properly, so that's how we ended up with the Buckmark. But the GSG 94 He's also got a Ruger LCR 22 Magnum, and that's from Mark.
Okay, so I was in contact with listener Jonathan about whether he could or cannot dry fire his Marlin 795, and I said, well, I looked through the manual and I saw nothing about it. So, him being a more intelligent person than I, he actually contacted Marlin and sent them a message. So, here's his correspondence with Marlin. Hi, I recently purchased a new Marlin 795, and I'm uncertain about whether or not it is okay to dry fire it. I've heard that it is not advisable to dry fire rim fire guns since the firing pin hits the barrel and therefore the pin could be damaged. However, I have also heard that many modern guns are designed to be dry fired safely. I didn't find any information regarding this in the owner's manual. Please clarify whether or not it is okay to dry fire it without damaging it. Thank you. Answer. Jonathan. It is not recommended to dry fire your 795. Your theory was partially correct. It can damage the firing pin, but it can also put a burr on the edge of the chamber, which can cause failures to the chamber and failures to extract. If dry firing is something you are pursuing for practice, we recommend using snap caps. This will provide protection to avoid the possible damage that can occur. So, please send...
That's good.
Yeah, sorry.
I was going to say, that's good information.
Yeah. So even though Marlin doesn't tell you in their instruction manual not to dry fire their firearm, they say don't do it.
But they tell you during your PAL course that you shouldn't dry fire rim fires.
Right, but I'm pretty sure the 1022 can be dry fired. Am I right, Mike, or...
I want to say you can. I remember reading somewhere that a lot of the modern 22 rimfires, you can now dry fire them. But
so I like guess said, modern like, would be.
I know Thomas would be salivating right now. Go read your manual and see what it says.
Well, it doesn't say anything in a Marlin one, anyways.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, then contact the manufacturers. Yeah. Clearly, they got back with a very good answer. So.
Yeah, it didn't seem like it took them. It didn't seem it took very long. So I don't know. I'm assuming that I don't actually know how long it took them to get back in, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So thank you everyone who sent in their emails about their favorite 22 after that 22 episode we asked them to reply about.
Yeah.
All right. So if you have any feedback, please send any feedback, questions, or comments you may have to host@newshootercanada.ca. Our Facebook page, and our comment section on our website at newshootercanada.ca. Does anyone ever check the iTunes or Stitcher? Is that still a thing? Do people still do that?
I still check it, but people have been hurting my feelings, and they haven't been doing any new reviews.
Oh, okay. Give us a review, people. Show us
some love. So I have to start yelling at you guys again?
Hey, it worked last time.
I know, right?
We'll send out the Bruiser Benny after you.
Or rather do this. Give a review and say whether or not you want George to continue on the show. That can be your review. Please ban George from the show, or please bring us more George.
I'm shaking my head.
So, in other words, if someone finds this show for the first time, they're looking through like, oh, I wonder if this is good. I'll read some reviews. And there's a whole pile of reviews about whether we should or should not keep George in the show.
Right. Well, so they're going to be like, oh, my goodness, what's going on this show? I got to find out what's and listen to the show. I don't know.
That's one possibility.
I haven't listened to podcasts in quite some time now. So anyways, moving on. Facebook likes, we are at 1167.
That's 1,167.
See, the way Benny said it, it makes it sound like we have way more.
It might even be more than that, because we just had another like today, I think, so I don't know when that
No, was. I quite literally, I'm looking at it right now, and we do not.
Well, there
Sorry.
We go. Now, Thomas, we're on to shout-outs, and Thomas has a shout-out. So I'll read a shout-out because Thomas doesn't like the listeners enough to read it himself. And his shout-out is to FOC for supporting, sponsoring, and donating to so many causes and charities. Thank you. Mr. Mike.
My shout-out is to the volunteers at the IDPA match this weekend and to Sarah for coming out to the match with me. I had lots of fun.
Awesome. Mr. Benny.
Mike only sounds better because he thanks Sarah first because he's first in the lineup. So thanks, Sarah, for coming up on the show and telling us about your experience. It's always good to hear someone else has joined the ranks of PAL holders. And as usual, shout out to my wife for putting up with me and keeping the house tidy and getting us all ready for the high holidays, which is coming up this week. So,
did you just call Wanda Sarah?
I think he did.
I did, because Mike wrote Sarah for coming out to watch him. And I'm like, yeah, thanks, Wanda, for coming on the show. And Sarah for coming on, what was that, 2 weeks ago?
2 weeks ago.
Yeah, at least I got that, yeah.
Thanks, Benny.
And George. That would be me. My shout-out is going to... I'm going to give a shout-out to Thomas first. Because I really kind of bust his chops and give him the gears quite a bit. So, and he's a good sport about it. So he's terrible at dishing it back, but he tries. And so my shout-out's to Thomas. He's a wonderful man, good friend. And yeah, so shout-out to him. And
you're talking about Thomas from Saskatchewan, right?
No, the old guy.
Yeah, his name was Terry.
Oh.
Names are not our strong point on this show, apparently.
And my other shout out, I think I gave Terry a shout out last time I was on the show. If not, Terry, it was a great visit. Thank you for coming down. I look forward to next year, and yeah, it was fun. It was a good time. And to my wonderful, beautiful Wanda for finally getting her pal and our pal. Well, you don't technically have it yet, but you will. You will in 6 to 8 months.
It's the waiting time now. So my shout-out?
Your turn for shout-out.
So my shout-out is to Sue and to Fred for providing such a warm learning environment for the weekend and making my first experiences in the gun community a very welcoming one. And yeah, thanks to them and to you guys for having me on. That's fun.
All right, and I think that's a wrap. So until next week, keep your barrels pointed downrange and smoke them.
Time spent at the range and time spent with family.
It's not about the odds, it's about the stakes.
What's Thomas's? Take a kid shooting. So take a kid shooting.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Ciao.
Well, I really like 22 now.
Thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you with any questions or feedback you may have, or if you just want to call shenanigans. You can contact us at host@newshootercanada.ca or through our Facebook page.
The way they look, I like the shiny steel and the polished wood. I don't care if they're big or small, they're for sale until I want them all. I like guns, I like guns, I like guns.
I like guns and the way they look.